Hello, and welcome to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, where you'll hear advice from experienced safety leaders on how to protect your people and business. I'm Peter Steinfeld. New York Blood Center Enterprises is one of the largest nonprofit blood collection and distribution organizations in the United States, providing life-saving blood products, biomedical research, and clinical services to hospitals and patients. Today's guest is NYBC Enterprises Head of Corporate Security, David Fortino. He's responsible for developing the center's first enterprise-wide security program to protect their 2,300 employees in more than 70 locations across over 17 U.S. states. His career began in emergency medical services, and now he's come full circle, applying that boots-on-the-ground experience to his role at NYBC Enterprises. From frontline physical protection to mobile site logistics, David is building a security program that adapts to the needs of employees, blood donors, and volunteers. Let's get into it. Hey, David, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, Peter, thank you for having me.
You're no stranger to building security programs. What were some of your priorities when you stepped into your role at New York Blood Center Enterprises?
I think anytime a new role is implemented across the organization, when you first get into that organization, it's important to understand, why did they hire you? And I don't necessarily mean you as a candidate, but what was the need for the role? It could be because there was an incident that occurred and they found the need for the role. Or it could be that a comparison company had this role and maybe they thought that it was in you as well. So when I come into a new organization and it's a new role, which this role was, I really want to sit down with the executive team and understand what keeps them up at night. What are their risks and what are their concerns? Because I never want to come into an organization and say, you must have a corporate security program that looks like this, and these are the pillars of priority. No. I want to build a corporate security program that meets the demand of the executives and the leadership to make sure I'm really understanding their risks before I continue my risk assessment and sort of the typical pillars of the corporate security program.
You know, I think that's huge. It's that old mantra of seek to understand before you seek to be understood. And if you can gain that alignment, then you're going to get much better buy-in instead of just coming in and dictating all sorts of orders.
Agree 100%, because every organization's risk posture is different. For one organization, the CEO's protection might be the top priority. For another organization, it could be, hey, we suffered a significant loss during a natural weather disaster, an earthquake, and crisis management is our top priority. So it's really understanding what was the need for the role in the first place.
That's interesting. Is that something you've always just naturally known to do? Or did you learn that the hard way? And you're like, okay, this is the new approach I need to take.
No, I think I was just taught over the years to kind of become a better listener. So again, not just coming into an organization and dictating this is the way it would be, but be flexible. Coming from the government, it was a little bit more rigid and a little bit more structured. And in the private sector, it's really making sure that you understand, how do I provide value and impact across the enterprise?
Speaking of that, you have worked in a variety of sectors before healthcare. So from a security perspective, what stands out to you as different or maybe just more complex about the environment that you're in now?
At New York Blood Center Enterprises, we are a complex organization. Our footprint from a real estate perspective is over 70 locations across the United States. We have hundreds of vehicles of fleet because we're literally bringing blood from point A to point B to a hospital to a person who really needs that blood. We have offices, labs, research facilities, donor facilities, and then contractors and vendors that support us. So when I say complex, I mean my role is not just protecting people in an office setting, but it's our mobile drives, our laboratories all across the country at all these different locations. So it is a complex role, and you're constantly prioritizing what's going on today and what do I need to forecast for tomorrow. My prior role was much more on compliance, executive protection with top priorities, making sure our executive team was protected. Travel risk management was a top priority because we had significant travel all around the world. And then my role prior to that role was manufacturing. And at that time, COVID-19 was the top risk. And also, this is when Russia initially invaded Ukraine. So dealing with that sort of incident as well was significant from a manufacturing perspective because we were so dependent on third-party vendors. And we could not just have our employees work from home. We had to be in a factory developing. So as you can see, all different organizations have different priorities and different risk postures.
And I bet a big part of being successful is sitting down and really understanding, what does the business do? What's the mission? Because if you fundamentally understand that,
then you can start to understand why people are prioritizing certain things over other things. And then you can make suggestions based on that, based on your history and education and experience. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, 100% spot on. You can't protect what you don't understand. So I think it's extremely important to understand the business that you're in and understand what are the critical processes or what are the critical operations of the business to ensure that my corporate security program is protecting that top priority and making sure that your policies, your plans, your guard force, your technology is supporting that top layer of priorities. Because at the end of the day, we don't want to have any disruptions to the business.
When you talk about where you are now being really complex, I can imagine that has a real impact on training. So what does your training strategy look like for ensuring employees across the organization are prepared for any kind of security incident that might happen?
I'm always readjusting and reevaluating the training. So it's a multi-layered answer. The first layer, I'm going to call it new employee orientation. Anytime a new employee starts at New York Bloodstar Enterprises, there is a 10-15 minute corporate security slide deck that's part of that. And that's a new initiative that I started. I want employees on day one to understand the importance of security at this organization. I want them to understand how we identify a suspicious person. I want them to understand what an incident response plan is. I want them to understand what shelter in place means, what run, hide, fight means. So on day one, it's important that our employees are at least well aware of a corporate security program here and how they could be a part of it. On one of my slide decks, it says, who's in charge of corporate security? And I said, you as a new employee are part of the corporate security program because I need your eyes and ears out in the field to report back to me.
Love that.
The next layer of training is annual training. So workplace violence, run, hide, fight, it's part of an all-employee training program to ensure that all of our employees, whether you're out in the field or you're in the office, have the necessary training and the necessary education as to how to handle a workplace violence incident. And then the next layer on top of that is tabletop exercises, right? So we have emergency response plans. We have a corporate crisis management team. And those plans are great, but if you don't train on them, they're just words on a piece of paper. So I make sure that we do a tabletop exercise with the senior leadership team on an annual basis. And then also our key critical sites around the country, that they also conduct a tabletop exercise to ensure that the team and the plan are being tested on an annual basis.
Do trainings and protocols for donor-facing staff, such as, let's say, phlebotomists, differ from those of the typical back office employee?
They do, because they face the most risk. In any healthcare setting, obviously the person on the front line, coming from the EMT world, I know that at times, even though you're trying to help a patient, sometimes that patient is unaware of their behavior because they may be under the influence or they might be having a medical emergency and just not aware of their aggression. We are now developing a program just for our frontline workers as to how to handle a escalated donor or patient. What does that de-escalation process look like? And how do we make sure that we de-escalate the situation to make sure that our employees are protected, but also the rest of the staff that are at a donor center? And if you can't de-escalate it, what does that incident management process look like to ensure that either law enforcement are involved or that we get other members of our leadership team involved?
Yeah, people just really need different tools based on what their job responsibility is. And it goes back to coming into a new organization. You have to first understand what is important to this organization, what do they face, what is their mission, and then you can build a good plan around that. And then you have to bring that same kind of curiosity to the individual job too, because every job has different needs and requirements, and you got to understand it to keep that person as safe and productive as you can. So are there any other key differences in handling the approaches to safety for donor versus volunteer versus employee?
Again, back to that layered approach. We have the tabletop exercises with our donors. So we actually walk them through a scenario with our phlebotomists that are getting blood from the donor. So we have tabletop exercises that we have drafted and are implementing now. Then there's online training for de-escalation training. And then I'm always trying to think of new creative ways. So if there's an incident, that a real world incident, which happens frequently, there's always something going on. I'll sit down with those involved, make sure we're capturing it from an after action report that what occurred, did it go the way we expected it to go? Is there anywhere areas that we can improve on? And make sure that we're actually not letting go of these actual real world incidents, but we're capturing it into our training program and making sure we're always readjusting to make sure that whoever was involved is being educated on how to improve in the future.
What unique security challenges come with operating mobile donation centers across a city like New York?
very unique challenge, and it's one that I encounter almost on a daily basis. So as I mentioned, we have offices, we have laboratories around the country, but then every single day, there are teams of people that will go to a college university, will go to an office setting in Manhattan, or will go to a park or law enforcement or a fire department and conduct a mobile drive. And the mobile drive is exactly what it sounds like, right? It's a setup of our drive. It's a temporary station where those who want to give blood could give blood. And then we have a third party who's hosting it. On my end, when something bad happens, what's the first question anybody in my role gets asked? Where are people involved? Whether it's an active shooter or something significant that was unexpected, any leader wants to immediately know, are my people involved? Are they safe? So then my responsibility is like, okay, we have a tool like Alert Media where I could see where employees' residential zip codes are, and I can see where geographically who might be in that area. I then need to go to another list and go, where are my mobile drives today? And sometimes they might be labeled a specific business name or a specific university name that might have multiple campuses. So then I got to find out exactly, are you at this building or are you at the town next door? Or sometimes there's office in New York City where they might have multiple offices just in Manhattan. Which location you at? Because sometimes that information may not be available or may be available. I just need to do a little bit more digging. So it's, are my people safe? Where are those mobile drives? Where are the offices? Are our donor centers open or closed? Because those hours vary as well. So anytime something called bang or incident occurs, it's been this sort of cascading effect to find out which part of the business might be impacted by that.
And I can imagine the responsibility for those mobile individuals has changed as duty of care has changed over the years. It probably was, you know, years ago, hey, we'll see you guys at the end of the day. Good luck. If you need help, call 911. Now there's just a whole different dynamic with the organization and the expectation that you're there doing things proactively to help protect. Is that a fair statement as well?
It's a completely fair statement. I think me coming into this organization and creating and building a corporate security program is a little bit of a culture change here. So when I'm sending you alerts and I'm checking up on you, the initial response is, okay, you know, and sort of getting them used to this process because this is new to them. We always cared for our employees, but the sort of alerting and advising through either Alert Media or another tool is something new to most of the employees here. So a great tool like Alert Media has been beneficial to us because now at those mobile drives, I could send a notification to those employees through the app or through just a web-based tool and be able to alert them to either shelter in place or relocate or go ahead and break down that mobile drive.
You know, it's really interesting you mentioned that the way you did, which is with everything, there's change management. So you have people that are going out in the field for years, used to being left alone. And you'd think when they find out that you know where they are and you can communicate with them, that they're going to be super happy about that. But you know what you get? They're skeptical. Like, whoa, what do you mean? Like, this is not how we've done things. So you have to think about that and not just assume they're going to be happy all of a sudden and eagerly embrace this new overwatch that you're giving them that's all in their benefit. And there's change management that you have to think about when you roll this out to those folks.
I feel like everything you say, I'm like, you're 100% correct, but this one especially. Security plays a unique role in any organization. We want to be a business enabler. We want to participate in the growth. We want to protect our employees. At the same time, we're the same people that are saying that door needs to be closed or no piggybacking behind the person behind you or where's your badge or I haven't had my badge because it's been lost. Like you're that person who's always saying, hey, don't forget this, don't forget that. You really need to do this, you really need to do that. You're trying to enable the business to grow. You want to participate in making sure that the company's going in the right direction, but you also want to make sure that they do it in a safe and secure way. And that may not always be the easiest way.
That's a big point there. You know, as you said, as you start to scale, you start putting these safeguards in place and it's not the easiest thing to do. So people don't want to do it. It's like, oh, I don't want to have everybody in this line of 12 people badge in. Can I just hold the door open? Well, I mean, technically you could, but it's not safe. It's not something you should do. And it's not going to help us scale and be safe in the future.
And I will say, I think if you come into a new organization that maybe is 10 years old, 5 years old, that's sort of to your advantage because the culture hasn't fully developed yet. If you come into a more legacy company that's been around for 180 years, a lot of those employees have worked for a significant amount of time and they're used to operating a certain way. And then you're coming in and you're sort of changing, you know, who moved my cheese? You're changing their behavior a little bit.
Yeah, definitely a challenge. Well, here's what I was thinking about before we got on the podcast together, because you transport something that's a little bit unusual. So what planning or safeguards are in place when blood is transported across the city or even across states? What happens if there's a collision or a delay or something like that?
Yeah, it's another risk. And that's why I think the first question you asked is, tell me a little bit about your organization. And I was like, it's complex. So the transportation of blood from point A to point B to point C to point D does increase our level of risk. So then it's our responsibility to figure out, okay, how are we going to mitigate this risk? And part of that mitigation of the risk is, where are our vehicles? Where's the blood going? When does it arrive? And just having that monitoring system to say, okay, here's my fleet that's out there, geofencing where they are located on a map, and then having a tool like Alert Media or other sort of situational awareness monitoring tools to be able to tell the drivers, hey, avoid this, or a steam leak just happened in the city, take FDR Drive instead of this other road, and helping redirect it so we're minimizing that disruption when something bad happens. But again, it's much different than a fixed location where you can say, okay, you're always going to be at this one location. No, our fleet, hundreds of fleet are constantly around the country, and we're trying to monitor where our vehicles are and making sure our blood gets to those necessary patients.
Well, it's definitely a problem that's like acutely important to you, because if you can't get somewhere and you've got this product that could expire, there could be some kind of issue, then it's, again, like I said, acutely important for you to know what's going on in your destination. But I think that is something that any organization can think about. Can my employees get to work today? Or maybe we need to deliver something somewhere. It doesn't happen often, but before you just get on the road and do it, understand what's going on the passageway to that or at the destination point. Or are you expecting to receive something from someone that you really need? Maybe you want to start keeping an eye on where it's coming from and the transportation that they're going to take along the way. And it can just make your business that much more resilient if you know that kind of stuff.
100%. And I always say, part of my challenge and part of my opportunity here is embedding myself in so many different levels of the business. So if any given hour, any given day, you're jumping from a vehicle delivering blood to a building that maybe had an activation that you need to deal with, to a workplace violence incident that you're working with HR on. I mean, so many different levels of the business that security adds value to and protects. Just give you a quick example. I've had regular meetings now with my HR leaders to make sure every 2 weeks we're talking. What's going on? What do you need from me? What do I need from you? My facilities team, what's broken? What's not working? My EH&S team, talking about environment, health, and safety. My legal team, right? Constantly reviewing things. So it's really embedding yourself in all these different pillars of the business to make sure that you're getting what you need from them, but then it's vice versa.
I love that mentality of essentially saying, how can I help you do more of what you do by keeping you safe?
Right. And by the way, you automatically usually get their buy-in by saying, I actually see myself as an internal sort of consultant within an organization. My job is to help you. Like, I want to educate the HR team on workplace violence and what to do if there's an escalation incident. The legal team, I want to sit down with you and make sure that my policy adheres to your rules and regulations. My fleet team, I want to make sure that I'm protecting them when they're out there. So it's really setting that conversation, saying, I'm here to help you, but I need a little bit of your help too. So let's work together.
Well, how do you prepare for high profile events or maybe just days when demand and risk might be both elevated?
This is where technology and third-party vendors and sometimes guard service could support you. So I'm always willing to take help from someone else. People in this organization knows that, like, if you ever want to be a participant of security or take on some planning, take on some tasks, you're more than welcome. But it's making sure that you're getting help from the various businesses to take on whatever risk is occurring. I'm a one-man show here, so it's just myself in security, but I have third-party vendors that support me from a physical perspective. And then I also have a technology vendor from a situational monitoring perspective, from a camera perspective, from a badging perspective. So it's making sure that your vendors are actually part of your team as well. So spend some time with them too. Make sure you build that relationship with them. Because an example that you just gave where you might have a high risk profile, you really need, if you're a one-person show or a small team, you really need that support from your vendors to make sure that you're successful.
Does that also include working with local law enforcement, getting your name out there? They know you, you know them, and you know how to escalate. They know how to reach out to you if certain things are happening.
I think in order to be successful in this role, if you're in the office every single day, you really need to get out into the field and meet with your local police chief in your community, or meet with your local precinct if you're in the city, Or are you part of the FDI InfraGuard group within your local jurisdiction? Are you part of OSAC if you're a global company? All these different great public-private partnerships really could help you excel in your field.
Well, every security program hits roadblocks along the way. What have been your biggest challenges and how are you working through them?
I would say my biggest challenge, and maybe a lot of people, is you come into an organization, you're like, especially if you start from scratch, the opportunities are endless. And you have this vision of how it could all come together and how it could all work. And you want to hit the ground running. But that typically requires funding and that typically requires resources. And you may not be allowed to have all the funding and all the resources to support a full GSOC or to support a full detail team for your executive. And that's when sort of reality hits and you go, okay, well, I have this great vision and I have this roadmap to how I want to get there. But I also need to understand how to be patient. And I need to make sure I understand what my priorities are, back to, I think, our initial conversation of what is the business's priorities? Why do they hire you? And make sure that you're tailoring it to a phased approach. And you're not trying to just do it all at once, because that will be the roadblock that I would hit, is you can't do it all at once because the money's not endless and the resources are not endless.
Do you think that's a big roadblock that people hit if they're maybe a little bit more inexperienced and they think, hey, I'm the smart person. I know everything. I know what this organization needs. And they're just going to listen to me instead of saying, hey, I'm going to come in here and I know there's going to be pushback. I know they're going to say we can't do that. I know they're going to be like, I don't want to have to swipe every time. Like, there's all these roadblocks that come in. And if you come in with that mentality, then you're likely to be more successful because every little win you get is going to provide positive reinforcement as opposed to just being upset at the beginning because nothing's happening.
Yeah, I agree. And I think spend time with your leadership team. So those small wins that you just talked about, embrace them. Send them updates. My leadership team loves updates, loves to know what's going on. And that might not be a small win to you, but that might be a small win to them because they're not used to even getting that information. So don't try to build that global security operations center overnight and have a full team of analysts and a protective intel team. What's important to the business, and make sure you're building a program that aligns to the importance of the business, not what you like to do.
And I like that idea too, of not taking every little thing that happens and forwarding it onto your executive team, but picking out the big stuff, saying, hey, this happened. Let me give you a quick 1-minute summary of what occurred. And if this were to happen to us, this is what I'm thinking. Here's how we could respond. Here's some gaps I see. What do you guys think? Do you want to invest to close these gaps?
I agree. And I always say the statement, you'll never get in trouble over communicating, but you could get in trouble under communicating. So feel out your leadership team. If you're new to an organization, start sending them stuff. And if they find it annoying or they find it too much, I'm sure they'll say like, hey, you know, we don't need to know all of that. That's fine. Then tailor back. But I'd rather be an over communicator than an under communicator. And then wondering, what are you even working on? I haven't heard from you in a while. Like, I know there's incidents going on in the world. I see the news. Is that impacting our people? Are you doing anything about it? I'd rather be proactive and have information for my leadership team to see that I'm working on, rather than them having to ask for it. They shouldn't have to ask for information. I should be providing that proactively.
Yeah, visibility is huge indeed. Well, what keeps you passionate about building and improving security programs, especially in the healthcare industry?
I get to protect people. I mean, if you look back at my career, you know, I started at 15, 16 years old as an EMT. I was that person on the ground dealing with a motor vehicle accident or cardiac arrest or chest pain call. So early on, I just had this passion of helping people and being on the front line and providing care to people. I feel like I've kind of done a full 360 back to my initial roots, although I'm not actually drawing blood here, but I'm protecting the people that are, and that's super important to me.
Amazing. Well, David, this has been great, chock full of terrific advice. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Peter, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
To learn more about David and his work with New York Blood Center Enterprises, click the links in the episode description. You can also watch video highlights from this episode on Alert Media's YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you get your podcasts. Stay safe out there.
Thank you for listening to the Employee Safety Podcast from Alert Media, the industry's most intuitive emergency communication and threat intelligence solution. To learn more about how to protect your people and business during critical events, visit alertmedia.com. Until next time.